At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Stacking the Box College Football Edition. I'm your host, Reed Wild, joined as always every week with Cody Williams. Cody, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good, man. You know, it was a Labor Day weekend's always a long weekend to college football. You know, we don't no rest for the wicked with like five straight days. But no, it was good, man. I'm excited to be back into the thralls of the season.
You want to know who's not excited to be back in the thralls of the season? The Florida State Seminole, who started the season with an embarrassing loss, and they bookend the week losing last night on Monday. They are not excited. 0-2, so any sort of upside there, you're probably done there for the Noles. It looks like bowling would be a positive there. Speaking, though, before we get into some other week one takeaways and some week two preview, we got to talk about I did not jump into the swing of things in college football. 1-5 for last year's winner myself. Cody, solid 3-3 for you. Listen, ahead though, up two games. What were some of your thoughts and takeaways from week one? Happy? I know 500, but you know, you take that, especially when the guy you're going up against goes 1-5.
Yeah, I'll take that, especially because I came out net positive because I did hit my underdog pick. Nevada coming through. Yeah. Shouts to the Wolfpack. You know, really happy for them. But I think that week one is one of the toughest weeks to handicap outside of week zero, honestly, just because we don't know what a lot of these teams are, especially in the transfer portal era. Like there is a learning curve that you have to go here. So like I tried to play it a bit conservatively in week one, and I'm probably going to do the same in week two, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah. I thought overall, I wouldn't say any of the, we're going to talk like some pleasant surprises, some unpleasant surprises, but I think that kind of shaky performance. Like some teams obviously look good, but I wouldn't say it was like the crispest, and maybe it's starting to look like that more, because I think college football is starting to look more like the NFL in terms of how it goes, especially in the offseason. So you see this in the NFL also, that week one, week two, even week three, it's a little bit more choppy and these teams don't look like their final form just yet. Yeah. It feels like with the transfer portal and all the turnover year over year now, maybe some more learning curves and rough starts for teams. I wouldn't say that like any, like you could argue LSU USC was like a high level game. I wouldn't go that far. It was compelling, but I wouldn't say it was like a really sharp game from both sides.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like there was really like a true, like sick game, like awesome game that like, it felt like both teams were really, you know, playing at 100%. It felt like a lot of teams needed to pick it up a little bit outside of Georgia, 'cause they looked dominant as always.
Yeah, Georgia looked like Georgia. And like I was asked on another show, you know, what was like the one thing I was confident in coming out of the week? And I was like, I'm pretty sure Georgia's the best team in the college football again. Like that's the one thing I feel confident saying at this point. Everything else, like the other thing that you got to factor into all this is like you look at Ohio State, you look at an Oregon where Ohio State was struggling, not struggling, but, you know, kind of in cruise control early against Akron. Oregon was in cruise control for the entire game against Idaho. But like, Are those teams really showing us anything at this point? Like what advantage do they have to show us anything? You look at Oregon, like they have a pretty big game with Boise State this week that we're going to talk about. Like, why would they put anything on film against Idaho? Why would Ohio State put anything meaningful on film when they have three games this year that matter within the Big Ten? Like, we're also dealing with that factor on top of teams also trying to gel a little bit after the transfer portal era.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And before we get to pleasant and unpleasant surprises, I will say that Oregon. I went back and watched some of the highlights, and I did some looking at the box score. That score line was not indicative of what happened in the game whatsoever. No. I know Oregon only won 24-14, but I believe they outgained Idaho by over 250 yards, and Idaho's first touchdown came on a trick play. They were in plus territory, but Oregon, they missed like three fourth downs. They had a fumble in plus territory. They missed a pretty long field goal. There weren't explosive plays. They were also starting a walk on at center. So I wouldn't overreact to Oregon's performance. No. That would just kind of get in and get out of that game. Let's talk some surprises, though. We'll start on the good side of things. Cody, what was one thing you were pleasantly surprised with from week one?
Nico Imeleva, the quarterback for Tennessee, redshirt freshman, getting his first start. I understand it was against Chattanooga, but against Chattanooga, it looked like, honestly, an upgraded version of what this Hendon Hooker offense looked like 2 years ago. Like, he looked like the absolute truth. The way that he had an immediate feel for Josh Heupel's offense, the way that he seemed to have a rapport with these receivers, the way that he just has such a live arm and that athletic frame. I was looking at Tennessee as like a fringe playoff team, like probably in that first four out range coming into the season. I understand, again, I'm trying not to ever react to Chattanooga, but man, he looked good. Setting a Tennessee single game passing or single half passing record in the first half. It looked like it was clicking on all cylinders right away in a week where we saw a lot of other teams in the first half specifically not click on all cylinders right away, not really get there. For someone who's making his first like true start outside of a bowl game in this offense, for him to look that impressive, even against inferior competition, that was that had me raising my eyebrows a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that goes to show you the fact that he sat behind Joe Milton for a year and that Josh Heupel played the long game on this one. It's paying off, and I agree with you. I flipped over to watch the first half, at least passively. He was making all the throws, downfield, over the middle, out routes, everything. And this is an offense that we know has capability to produce Heisman-level contenders like Hendon Hooker before he blew out his knee at the end of the year. Yeah, I think Tennessee's pretty legit. I think that I was pretty excited about them going into the year. I have some SEC winner tickets there, like 18 to 1. So I am in on Tennessee. We'll see if they could keep up with the Georgias. And we're going to talk about them against NC State. But this is a team with an offense that's going to be top five in the country in terms of yards per play. They play that fast and they're that explosive. The defensive line is elite with James Pierce. He hardly even played against Chattanooga. Yeah. Arguably the best defensive player in the country. The secondary is a concern, but this Tennessee team, it looks like it's going to be able to, like, gap year of 2023, it's going to look more like the 2022 team.
No, 100%. And, like, they were flirting with the four-team college football playoff in 2022. Like, and before Hendon Hooker got hurt, they were absolutely in flirtation with that. And that was with a defense that was far worse. Like, they didn't have this defensive line that's one of the better units in the SEC. They didn't have that as an advantage, even if the secondary is still a little shaky, which I agree with. Like, they did not absolutely have the defense that they were able to – that they're able to put forth this year. So you add that factor into it, and Tennessee looks live. I got to be honest with you. I'm a little jealous of the 18-1 future. I'm not sure if they can get past Georgia, but, it's a nice ticket to have.
I will not get too excited about them winning the SEC, but I see that they can at least compete. So for me, moving on for a pleasant surprise, Miami. Miami, a team where I was on the sideline going into the year. I was like, okay, I think this team's going to be really good. They have a lot of talent. They paid a lot of money. I understand all that, but I want to see it, right? I want to see it on the field before I make any conclusions. And maybe it's more about Florida, but I'm going to take this as a Miami upside. And this team looked like it was going to compete for, the college football playoff and national championship. Forget how good they looked against Florida, absolutely carving them up in the secondary. The defensive line looked dominant. Look at the rest of the ACC. Florida State's out. They're done. It's over for Florida State already. Clemson, we'll see what their upside is. I still think Clemson's pretty good. But again, we're talking ceiling. Miami clearly has the higher ceiling than Clemson. Virginia Tech lost. Kyron Jones already got hurt. North Carolina State looked shaky. SMU has looked shaky. Who am I missing? Louisville. We'll see if they have the high-end ceiling. I think I hit most of the contenders. But to me, Miami showed, okay, maybe it won't click overall, but at our best, we can beat nearly anyone in the country, and we can play on the college football playoff.
No, absolutely. And I think the biggest factor in me like being positive about Miami coming into this is how many times over the past 2 years have we been able to look at Miami and say, this team can beat anyone in the country if they play to their ceiling. We haven't known that fact because Mario Cristobal teams have a chronic problem of not playing up to their ceiling. And with the most talented team that I would argue that he's had at Miami, seeing them immediately come out and play to their ceiling, and I understand it's an in-state rivalry game, so maybe that's a factor in it. Maybe that's something to watch moving forward. But it looks like Cam Ward had progressed since his Washington State days. Like, he made a – like, there was one mistake, one throw that got picked off. But outside of that, he was making a lot of throws, making a lot of smart decisions, not forcing the issue. The fact that we're seeing Miami under Mario Cristobal already kind of realize and show its potential, which is something I think we haven't seen in the past 2 years, that's a huge thing for me in actually believing in the Canes.
Yeah, I think – look, Cam Ward, there's no denying the talents. Can he be consistent enough? But also, this is the most talented team he's ever played on. So you're seeing kind of that blend of – he has a high ceiling with the talent being there. He doesn't have to do as much. And we saw that interception. He tried to kind of force it in there, make a play that wasn't there. And it gave Florida a little bit of life in that game. And then he pulled it back in and he realized, okay, I'm going to play with him myself. We're much better. We're going to blow him out. And they do just that. And you look at Miami's schedule, it's looking like they're going to really have a runway here to be a shoo-in for the ACC title game. Famous last words, because Mario Cristobal will blow another game is a big favorite. But it's as good of a start for a team that has as high of expectations relative and like the need to produce. I wouldn't say they have like national championship or bust like some of these other teams, but in terms of the pressure to really go out there and perform, Miami's up there like as much of a pressure cooker as any other team. Cause like Georgia, I wouldn't like throw into this category, Ohio State maybe, but this is Miami team that needs to be at the very least in the ACC title game for this to be considered a successful season. And it looks like they are going to do just that. So, you know, hats off to Miami. Cause I wasn't selling them, but I wasn't all the way in like, yeah, this is Miami. They're back. Like I wanted to see it and I saw it.
Yeah, I think rightfully so. I think we were both kind of in wait and see mode with Miami because that's what Mario Cristobal has forced our hand to do in his college career, in his college coaching career. So I think that's absolutely right to look at it and say, Mario, go out there and prove it. And then like you talk about, you know, getting into the ACC championship game with what the ACC has looked like, which I'm going to unpack a little bit further in just a second. But like with what the ACC has looked like and the automatic qualifier spot being available to the ACC, a top four seed and a bye in the college football playoff, this is kind of the year you want to compete atop the ACC. Like this is a huge thing moving forward, but it's the first year that we've seen it.
Yeah, no, it was as strong of a start for the Canes as you could have imagined. What was one team, Cody, you were unpleasantly surprised with in week one?
So I didn't go with the team. I went with the conference and I went with the ACC.
Okay.
The entirety of the ACC just disappointed
outside
me.
Outside of Miami.
Outside of Miami, correct. Like North Carolina won against Minnesota, handed the Big Ten their only loss of the week. Was not impressed with anything I saw from North Carolina. Like it was not a good performance. That was more about Minnesota, in my opinion, than it was about North Carolina and a little bit of luck because Minnesota had to miss a field goal as time expired. But you look at the across this league, like Georgia Tech got the big win against Florida State in week zero. Then they go out and they play Georgia State, a Georgia State team that's bad and projected to be one of the worst G5 teams in the country. But I do think that Georgia Tech's win against Florida State now does not look as impressive. Boston College's win against Florida State doesn't look as impressive. Like it seems to me that if you have a mobile quarterback, you're going to be able to give this Florida State defense problem. We've already talked about Florida State, a team we're in week one, at the end of week one, and they already have two losses. That tells you everything you know about the Seminoles. You look at NC State, who was trailing going into the fourth quarter against Western Carolina. I'm from Western Carolina. I have a lot of friends who went to Western Carolina. Let me tell you, if you're trailing them as an FBS program, you're doing something very wrong. I don't care if you weren't showing anything because you play Tennessee this week. That's not a good thing. I don't care. Like I look through this conference and I just don't see a whole lot that impresses me. Syracuse was going up against an Ohio team that is frankly just depleted from the transfer portal and what they lost in graduation as well. And they beat them by 16 points. Kyle McCord looked good, but at the same time, the defense did not look very good under Fran Brown, in my opinion. So I think Virginia Tech, we talked about them losing to a Vanderbilt team. Makes me wonder if Vanderbilt would be in the contention for an ACC title if they're in the ACC looking at this.
I was going to say, where would Vanderbilt rank in the ACC right now. They'd probably be a top four team.
Just given how absolutely.
The conference looks.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely in play just because, like, my big take on the ACC coming into the year is that there was not a great team there. Like, I thought that was going to be the case no matter what. But I'm like, I think it might be Miami as a good team, and then the other teams are, like, maybe slightly above average. Like, I just don't see it. We talk about Clemson. Like, yes, there's a, like, I don't think that there's any world where even if Dabo Swinney uses the transfer portal, they're not going to be able to keep up with Georgia. Georgia's just that damn good.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of where I come down on that. Like, let's not use that as the test case example for why Dabo needs to use the transfer portal. But at the same time, like, that defense in the second half, they got their will broken. They, like, Georgia just absolutely broke their will on the what's supposed to be Clemson's strength. Cade Klubnik just isn't it. Like, if I have to watch that guy panic one more time when he gets pressured, any kind of pressure, I'm going to lose my mind because the talent's clearly there, but he just cannot sufficiently run an offense at the college football level at this level. I'm an ACC guy, obviously, as a North Carolina fan. I am very frustrated with this conference, and at this point, I'm just like, dissolve the whole damn thing because this isn't what I want to see from him.
Yeah, no, it was a really dismal effort from the ACC to start. And again, I mean, we just sang Miami's praises, and it just shows you how far ahead this team might really be going into conference play. Obviously, Miami hasn't started conference play. So the ACC has had a few conference games. I will say one team I'm interested to see where they fall into this SMU. I know it looked bad against Nevada, but if this conference is going to be this wide open – I'm not ruling out SMU going on a run in their first year in the conference, given that maybe the jump isn't as pronounced as you would think from a team going from the G5 to the Power 4 ranks. So we'll see if SMU, because we know they have talent. It was obviously shaky out in Reno, but they play Friday night against BYU. Maybe there's more to this team than just it's a down year for them. So we'll see how Preston Stone and the Stangs look. An unpleasant surprise for me, I landed on Texas A&M.
Okay.
So I went on about how I thought A&M had the edge with Notre Dame coming on the road, Kyle Field, raucous environment. The defense looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
But Connor Wegman, who I wouldn't say I was in love with going into the year, I didn't necessarily see like first-round quarterback hype, but I thought like this guy can really thrive in an offense in a small sample size. He's shown he can be more than, you know, your Jag quarterback. He can be a pretty high-end quarterback. And I thought that A&M would be able to do enough to win this game against a really good Notre Dame defense. Man, by the late third, fourth quarter, Wegman was seeing ghosts out there. He was fading. He was airmailing passes. He was throwing into tight zones, not like threading a needle, like really putting the ball in dangerous places.
Yeah.
For me, A&M, I'm not going to say like they're done and I'm like full on panic mode with them, but man, that offense did not look what I had hoped. And I know they had some early injuries on the offensive line. I believe two starters went down and that kind of, I guess, even the playing field against Notre Dame. But I thought I'd see a little bit more from Wegman because it wasn't like Riley Leonard, because A&M's defense was great and Notre Dame really struggled to move the ball. But you saw Leonard making plays, whether it was with his legs, even if he would get them close to a first down, they have to punt. Riley Leonard, it was a struggle, but he was doing his best. Wegman, it was a struggle and he was incapable of doing good, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Riley Leonard, Notre Dame's offense wasn't thriving. They pulled away late, but Leonard was doing all he could to try and keep them in the game. Wegman, man, that was a hyper-concerning sign. And again, maybe A&M, because I still think, you look down their schedule, it's not as hard as you would think going into the year, given how some of these teams looked, and a lot of their tough games are at home. So it's not like I'm ruling out this team can't go 9-3, 10-2. But in those big games, that's some scar tissue for me watching Wegman really struggle in that game against a high-level defense.
No, I think that's absolutely fair. The one thing why I'm not ready to I'm definitely not ready to write off A&M just yet is, A, you talk about the difference between Connor Wegman and Riley Leonard. Honestly, they could be very similar players in their finished products, but Connor Wegman is nowhere close to a finished product because we've barely seen him. We're well aware of the name because of when he came into the college ranks, but he's had so many injuries. I think he's made like 8 starts in his college career because of injuries, whereas Riley Leonard has a full workload under his belt in his college career from his time at Duke. So, I do think the experience factor in that environment against – I mean, I think it's fair to say the other factor in this is these are probably two of the best defenses in the country. Yeah. Like, no joke about, no doubt about it. Like, that was a rock fight we watched on Saturday night. These two teams were just clubbing one another to death. But, like, I do think that I'm willing to give Connor Wegman at least a little bit of grace as he gains more experience, as he plays defenses, frankly, that aren't that caliber, as the same caliber as Notre Dame. Like, I think he will gain some confidence, and hopefully the hope for Texas A&M fans, if you're wanting to be optimistic out of this, is that he can erase some of that scar tissue by getting more comfortable just playing the sport, because he's been robbed of that because of injuries.
I'd say I'm more unpleasantly surprised, because, as you know, I had high expectations for A&M.
Yes.
And again, it's not that this team can't be good and this team can't get better. It was just like, I thought I'd see a little bit more, even like a game plan. It just seemed like they had to abandon it so fast. And I'm going through like his PFF, Wegman, 12-30, two picks, zero big time throws, three turnover worthy plays. Average depth of yards per attempt. He averaged 3 yards per attempt. So like, there was no time, there's no process. Oh man. And then, I don't know, first game under a new coach, I thought they maybe would have I thought early fourth when they scored to tie 13-13, I was like, oh, A&M like kind of they settled in, like they're gonna pull this one out, and then they kind of got ran over at the end. There was just a little bit of a disheartening outing for a team that I thought had a little bit higher upside, in my opinion. But credit to Notre Dame, 100%, they deserve the credit in that one. This wasn't like A&M blew it or something. Notre Dame took that game.
No, and to your point with A&M, like, if there is any concern, I believe it's their starting center. He's done for the season. He tore his ACL. So, like, you're losing your starting center for the season. That's not what you want with a quarterback, like I just said, who is trying to gain experience. Now he has to adjust to a new center.
Yeah.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of experience. It's your look inside one of the world's most experienced active investment managers. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
All right, good stuff on week one. You want to talk some week two?
Let's do it, man. Let's move on.
All right, so Cody got off to a good start, as I said, 3-3. Yours truly, after winning last year, going to spot Cody a few games. So I went 1-5 last week. So we got a handful of games. We got a few marquee matchups and then our standard underdog and sickos pick. As Cody mentioned, he hit his underdog outright. I also got in on a Nevada in that game as well on the money line. So that was a nice win for the Wolfpack. Looked far, far improved. But let's turn the page to week number two. Biggest game on the slate is going to be Texas at Michigan. The Longhorns, I mean, you can't find anyone who wants to bet Michigan at this point. Longhorns out to a 7.5-point favorite in Ann Arbor against the defending national champions after they, we'll put it mildly, struggle on offense against Fresno State. Defense looked really good, but the offense, they don't go with Alex Orji to start. They go with the senior, I believe, former walk-on, Davis Warren, who struggled as well. Orji couldn't throw the ball. So we'll see. Longhorns, meanwhile, new-look offense with Quinn Ewers. They hung 52 on a pretty good G5 team in Colorado State. So now all the momentum goes to Texas, who enter, again, 7.5-point favorite, total 44.5. Cody, I'll give you first word.
Yeah, I'm going to go Texas minus 7.5. I'm going to take it and just not think twice about it. I still think Michigan's being overvalued. I watched this offense, and man, I didn't see it. Like, obviously the quarterback play is the most evident thing. Like, the drop-off from J.J. McCarthy. I think all the J.J. McCarthy haters that we were talking to last year, I think they might be coming to our side now, realizing how good they had it in Ann Arbor last year. But beyond the quarterback play, Michigan didn't run the ball well against the Fresno State team. This offensive line did not put up the best PFF grades in terms of run blocking or pass blocking in this game. And now you're going up against a Texas team that, yes, they lost a lot on the defensive front, but they also added a lot in the transfer portal. And they, you know, that's what Sark has done. He's supplemented this roster so well in the transfer portal and while recruiting at an extremely high level. I think that Texas's defense is going to absolutely wreak havoc against this Michigan offense that I think is frankly just flaccid and lifeless. I do wonder how many points Texas is going to be able to put up here because the Michigan defense still looks damn good. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, those guys. But I do think Michigan's greatest strength outside of Will Johnson on the outside is the defensive front, whereas Texas still has one of the better offensive lines in the country. They absolutely handled business against Colorado State, which, again, two different types of tasks. But I do think Texas' offensive line is up to the task of at least mitigating what Michigan is able to do in the trenches. So I think Texas is going – I don't expect this to be a high-scoring game. I can see this ending like 17-3 or something in that range. Like, I absolutely think that's in the cards. But I don't see Michigan being able to put up as many points as Texas is able to in this game.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallel between this game and Texas's road trip last year to Tuscaloosa, where they come in as a pronounced underdog against Alabama and they go out and take care of business in Alabama. I think this game's a little – there are parallels in terms of it's week two. They're going on the road. They're playing a high-end opponent. Like, I see the parallel, but this game now is sort of shifting where Texas was a considerable underdog going to Alabama. SEC team, they're joining the conference next year, maybe a bit more aggressive, higher scoring expected. This game's going to be a lot different. And I'm curious what Texas is going to put out there because we've seen Quinn Ewers under pressure really struggle to protect the ball, to extend plays. He does well when it's his first or second read. It's still a pretty new wide receiver room. They lose their top four pass catchers from last year, pretty decent offensive line. But I wonder if this is going to be a slower approach. I think I don't think Texas wants to fall behind in this game and let Michigan's defense really kind of flex their muscles. Because to me, it sounds so stupid, but like, I don't see a crazy run in this game. I think like if a team goes up two scores, like that's a different type of two scores than in a, you know, your high totaled game where it might be in the 60s or something. Like, to me, if Michigan can get up two scores and they can lean on that ground game, their special teams and their defense, play field position and keep Texas at bay, I think that's a possible game script. If Texas goes up 14-0, Michigan's probably done. I struggle. To me, like, first team to 20 wins. So I'm on, as it comes across, I'm on the first half under 22.5. Michigan, we know they're going to play slow. They played at a bottom five pace last year. It's going to be more of the same. And they're going to try and really establish the ground game. This is a Texas defense that lost two of the best defensive linemen in the entire country last year, and Tavondre Sweat and first round pick Byron Murphy. I think that Michigan's going to say, all right, Davis Warren can't throw. Alex Orji definitely can't throw. We're just going to try and pound it and try and move down the field that way. Maybe a few trick plays here or there to, you know, advance the ball, chunk plays. But and they're going to try and test this Texas defensive line. And on the other side, I don't know if Texas is going to try and light them up. I don't think that's in there. I don't think that's smart for Sark, because what if there's a field flipping turnover? All of a sudden you're giving Michigan life that it otherwise wouldn't have. I think Texas would be cool saying, okay, you could go 80 yards. Like, we'll find a stop. So to me, first half under 22.5, I think this game's going to be really slow. I think it's going to be really tight. Honestly, a score line looking similar to the A&M Notre Dame game, I feel, is in line for this one. So totals come down. First half under is my preferred method here.
Legitimately, I could see this game, like the full game total, hitting under 22.5. So obviously I like the first half play.
Yeah, I just think it's going to – I don't think it's in Texas. And look, Texas can blow them out. I just don't know if it's the prudent play and how Sark is going to play this by trying to air it out on Michigan's defense. They're too good.
No, absolutely. Like, I think that what you said about, like, there not being runs in this, I think is super crucial to what this game is going to look like. My envisioning of what this game script looks like, especially with me being on the Texas side of this, is the scripted first drive for Texas is super important. If they come out and they're able to just like cut through them like a knife through butter. I think they kind of pack it in after that because they know that playing with a lead against this Michigan offense is to their advantage in a very big way. So just protecting that lead and like relying on your defense, I think is going to be crucial.
Yeah. So we see the game. I don't know if I like Texas with the points, but
I wish it was 6.5. I can assure you of that. I wish it was 6.5, not 7.5.
It just, maybe Michigan's offense really is worse for wear, but it's just such an overreaction to one game. So we'll see. Maybe it's not an overreaction, but it's.
I mean, it was against a Fresno State team whose head coach had to leave middle of the offseason for health reasons. Like, that's a team you should absolutely beat the brakes off of. And they didn't. Like, 30-10 isn't even indicative of what that game looked like because Will Johnson had like a 90-yard pick six in the final minutes. So like we're not talking about a Michigan team that blew out a Fresno State team that is frankly not going to be that competitive in the Mountain West.
Mm. Boise State, Oregon, Boise State. Look, man, this is – I know we were talking about it last week on your – to make the playoff bid. Boise's got to show up here. In my opinion, you got to put at least a respectable score line on the board. Not saying you got to win, but if you got to keep this one competitive because when at the end of the season, they're going to look at, all right, how these teams do in their toughest games. Boise can't get boat raced here. So Boise travels to Eugene to take on Oregon. They're catching 18.5, the total 61.5. Boise's defense looked absolutely terrible last week against Georgia Southern. They left 45 points, but it's okay when you have Ash and Genty, their running back. Tally six, count them, six touchdowns in the 56-45 win in Murfreesboro. They're now back on the road. They're playing Oregon, who we spoke about it before, 24-14 against Idaho. We'll see how the offensive line injuries come into play. But, Cody, do you think Oregon reminds people that they are a college football playoff contender and a national championship contender? Or can Boise's offense kind of strike – some fear into Oregon, and maybe Oregon continues to play this one a little bit closer to the vest?
I think I actually kind of land somewhere in the middle of that. I don't think Boise is ever going to scare Oregon. However, I do think Boise is going to score at least a bit on Oregon, but I do think Oregon is going to have their way offensively. I think that's ultimately where I come down. I'm on the over in this game, over 60, I believe it's 61.5. Sorry, not looking at the line. Yeah, over 61.5 in this game. I think that Oregon's going to do the heavy lifting to get us there, but this Boise State defense was just dog water, man. They had no answer for Clay Helton's Georgia Southern Eagles. And so, like, I do think that I'm a little bit worried about my college football playoff future because of what I saw from Boise State's defense, especially with Spencer Danielson taking over. Like, that should be what he should be focused on. Instead, it was, okay, Ash and Genty, just carry us to a victory. But I do think Ash and Genty can carry them to a lot of wins against G5 teams. I do think he's going to have success against this Oregon team. Like, we saw Idaho, like you mentioned, put together some trick plays, some trickeration, if you will, to move the ball and create some explosives. I do think Boise State is capable of that with some of the playmakers they have, like Genty and other guys on the outside, but I don't think it's going to be close. Like, I almost went Oregon with the points here, -18.5, but I think the over, I'm just confident in there being a lot of scoring in this game, and like I said, I expect Oregon to do the heavy lifting in that.
Yeah, see, I was never in on Boise State going into the year because their defense wasn't good last year either. And I just feel like everyone kind of lost sight of the fact of that last little run where they kind of got a favorable run out in who they played. This team was still 97 in yards per play allowed. They allowed more than 6 yards per play, allowed 100. They allowed more than 8 yards per pass. That's 112th in the country. They ranked 107th in explosive pass rate. I mean, this was a bad defense last year. You saw it. It's not looking much better by hiring their DC to run the team now. I don't know. Maybe Oregon continues to slow play this, but I took the team total over 40.5. So we see it similar way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really think Oregon's able to put more together. You look at how Oregon moved the ball in this game against Idaho. It was fairly efficient. 47% success rate, but not a lot of explosive plays. I mean, Dylan Gabriel threw the ball 50 times, but they only had a 3% explosive play rate. So relative to games last year, fourth percentile. So they weren't given anything over the top. I don't know. I feel like Oregon in this game where there might be more of an impetus to score a little bit, because I give you credit that Boise is likely going to score. It's a pretty solid offense. I think that's going to push Oregon to at least keep the pace up and at least be a little bit more deliberate in, hey, we got to go like get points. Like we can't do like the 6 minute death march, even settle for three. Cause granted it was 14-7. It never felt like super like, oh, Oregon's on the, like NC State, Western Carolina. There was a point there where NC State's like, oh, like they're like down. They need to score on this drive or they're going to lose the football game. Yeah. Oregon always at least had control in the game, even if it didn't look so pretty. So I think in this game, it might kind of wake Oregon's offense up a little bit.
No, 100%. Like when I looked at the game in the second quarter and saw how close the score was between Idaho and Oregon, I flipped it on and the box score was not indicative of what was happening on the field there. It felt almost like a big brother holding a little brother by their forehead and just like keeping them at arm's length and like, you know, okay, you got one by me. That's great. You're not going to do it again. And so like, that's really what that game felt like.
Oregon, 495 yards of total offense. Idaho, 232 in that one. Or, I mean, it just, like, the box score doesn't even, like, make sense. I mean, Oregon ran, like, 96 plays. They played, like, a stupid slow tempo in this one, which is pretty not like them. They averaged nearly 9 yards per drive, 9 plays per drive. Idaho, a little more than four. So they were typically three and outing. So the game just didn't make much sense in this one. So I like
really Oregon. Didn't.
I like Oregon team total over in the game against Boise State. We keep it moving to talk Tennessee, NC State. This game is going to be on a we'll call it semi-neutral site in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah. Tennessee, we spoke, you know, good grace about them. We spoke a little bit about NC State struggles. What are your thoughts here? You got Tennessee now out to a 7.5-point favor with a total of 59.5 for the Vols against the Wolfpack. Cody, what are your thoughts here?
I am terrified of taking a side in this game because as bad as NC State looked, they are one of the poster children for teams that I think were absolutely trying to sleepwalk and then almost got caught sleepwalking. Because what is the advantage of showing anything against Western Carolina when you have a huge game against Tennessee looming the next week? Like, there's no advantage to that at all. And I think they almost got clipped because of it. Mm-hmm. I do think the one thing I'm confident in is that NC State's defense is not good. They lost a lot. They lost their general Peyton Wilson last year from a defense that was maybe slightly above average a year ago, but not anything super, super special. I do think the offense can be upgraded, and I do think we're going to see that. I do think that Grayson McCall and Kevin Concepcion are capable of attacking this weak Tennessee secondary like we've talked about, but I think Tennessee has their way. I talked about Nico at the top of the program. I really don't see NC State having a whole lot of answers for this Josh Heupel offense, so I went over 60.5 on this one. I think that total's a little low. I think this is a back-and-forth shootout for much of the game. I do think if I had to pick a side, I would probably lean towards the Vols covering, but I'm not 100% confident in that because I do think I don't want to overreact to a game where I'm almost 100% confident that NC State was just trying to get out of Dodge and not really show too much.
Same thing as the last game. So I'm on the Tennessee team total over 34.5. I'm most confident in their offense, and maybe I'm a little bit higher in NC State still than you, and that this defense is still solid, but what they do in Tony Gibson, their defensive coordinator's 3-3-5, is keep everything in front of you, right? But no explosive plays. Easier to do in the ACC than the SEC. So I do wonder if Tennessee could crack a few, but this is a team that was below the national average in yards per play allowed last season. And again, we are noting maybe their defense isn't bad, but it's definitely worse than last season. So where is that going? So even if Tennessee takes what's in front of them, takes the, like Nico showed, he's not going to be like forcing the issue and going into tight quarters. He's going to go underneath and, you know, put speed in space, Squirrel, White and company. So I think Tennessee's going to be able to move the ball, and it's about if they could convert on these scoring chances, playing at a fast tempo. So I think there's going to be extended possessions in this, like, or extra possessions relative to the normal game script. It's just if Tennessee could cash in on those red zone chances, I think they will. So to me, 35, 5 touchdowns. Yeah, I like the Vols. I think on the side, it's getting a little hefty towards the Tennessee side, but I probably lean that way as well. Just a lot of points to give to an NC State team I still respect, but yes. I think Tennessee is going to dictate terms of this one. I don't think NC State's going to be able to slow them down. It's going to be, can they keep up?
No, and NC State was my pick to win the ACC coming into the year because I did not believe in Clemson. I did not believe in Florida State. So, like, I was high on NC State coming into this year. I definitely got nervous during the Western Carolina game because of that. But I think that they were trying not to show anything. I do think that Dave Doran in his career has proven time and again that when it's a big game like this, he's going to have NC State ready. They may not win, but they are going to, they're not going to roll over and not be competitive. I just think the way to be competitive with the game script that I see for this game is going to be putting points on the board, because I think there's going to be a lot of them.
We mentioned before, and I said it kind of in passing, but Tennessee, elite defensive line, secondary a bit suspect. They are counting on some G5 transfers. NC State's passing game looks better. McCall threw for over 300. I know he had to because they were losing. But with Concepcion, the sophomore, and Noah Rogers, the Ohio State transfer, maybe NC State's able to, you know, get a few big plays through the air, and McCall is able to kind of sling it a little bit against a Tennessee secondary that has issues. So that's why maybe NC, I don't see Tennessee blowing their doors off.
No.
So I do agree that NC State can maybe find a few answers through the air and get this game over the total. So I don't hate your look as either. I just wanted to stay hyper-focused on Tennessee.
And I like your play as well. You got your pick in before me. I was actually eyeing the Tennessee team total, but I was like, I don't want to double up here, and I'm pretty confident in the over, the full game over as well. So I'll go with that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
So we go to a rematch from last year in a game that, Cody, correct me if I'm wrong, but last year, Colorado and Nebraska were playing in Boulder, I believe it was week two.
Yes.
And like the summer line that they hung out there at sportsbooks was like Colorado, like a 7.5 point home underdog. And then it flipped all the way where they were like a 10 point home favorite after they beat TCU, something like that. Right.
Yeah. Well, Nebraska also looked terrible in week one as well. Yeah. If I remember correctly,
they lost to Minnesota, I think, on national.
Yeah,
I think.
Maybe I think that sounds right. It was
I can't remember that.
Let's check it out. Let's do some live research. I'll tee up
the game for you. But so Colorado Nebraska meet for the second time in 2 years. Nebraska laying over a touchdown now after they look great against UTEP in their opener. Dylan Raiola looks the part of a 5-star quarterback. I watched the majority of the game. Big time throws. I know it's UTEP, but he was putting the ball where it needed to be, both short and down the field. They now face a Colorado team that it looks a lot the same what it was last year. I know that Shadur's really good, Travis Hunter's really good, but they couldn't run the ball again, and the defense struggled to contain North Dakota State against a potent and resurgent Nebraska team that is physical and looks to now have something brewing on offense. We'll see how high the ceiling is, but something at least is there. There's a foundation. Nebraska laying over a touchdown, total 57.5. What are your thoughts, Cody?
So just to circle back, it was last year was the Minnesota loss, 13-10. Nebraska lost to Minnesota, and then we had Colorado beating TCU. So that caused a lot of the line movement to go crazy before this game last year. I have over 57.5 in this game because, like you said, the Colorado defense, man, we've got to get Shiloh Sanders off the field. Beyond, like, my God, that kid is like, you have to have someone better on this roster with all the transfers you brought in. But that secondary, you can attack it. And Dylan Raiola looked the part of someone who can absolutely attack that. Nebraska improved the wide receiver core. We heard Matt Rhule all offseason hyping up this receiving core. And I was like, okay, Matt Rhule, slow your roll a little bit. But, you know, against the UTEP team that is, you know, middling, I would say, they absolutely looked the part. Dylan Raiola looked comfortable. I think that was the biggest takeaway for me is we saw a lot of new quarterbacks in new places. Avery Johnson at Kansas State comes to mind, who looked uncomfortable at times. Dylan Raiola did not look that. Dylan Raiola looked like he knew he belonged and he was ready for the moment. So I think coming into this game, obviously it being in Lincoln makes me lean towards Nebraska a little bit. But the two things I'm confident in are these two quarterbacks just absolutely putting numbers on the board. I think Colorado can score on a lot of defenses they're going to see this year. I think that Shador, from what I saw in that North Dakota State game, has leveled up. I think he is a better quarterback than he was at the beginning of last year. I honestly see this game looking very similar to what we saw Colorado TCU look like towards the beginning of last year, where it's just whoever has the ball last is going to win and going to pull away from this one. But I do think that neither team has any trouble scoring. I think this total should be in the 60s. I think that we're just going to see a lot of points on the board.
Yeah, watching the Nebraska-UTEP game, UTEP missed a few. They actually hit one for a long touchdown, but they were able to get behind the Nebraska secondary. And this is a good Nebraska defense, but it seems like the weak part is on the back seven because, again, there were like three or four times where UTEP was close to hitting some big, big shots, like 40, 50-yard passes in the air. So we'll see if Colorado is able to do the same. I think Nebraska takes care of business. At this line, no way. I agree with you, though. I like the over because I don't think Colorado's defense is going to be able to get stops against a Nebraska passing game that is legitimate now. I watched it. I saw it. I know it's UTEP, but you can see the passes Raiola was capable of making are above average, we'll call it. I don't want to say like elite because he only played one game, but he was able to make some passes that show why he's a five-star freshman. It wasn't the hype. It was these are like 20-yard balls on a dime right in the basket. So I was very impressed there, and I don't trust Colorado's defense. On offense for Colorado, I think they're going to be able to scheme up a few big shots. I do think, though, there are going to be some drives that really are going nowhere, which is where I think they lose the game. I think both teams are able to score and get into the mid to high 20s, but it's where Nebraska could string together consistent drives, where Colorado, I don't think they have the horses to hang with a pretty physical Nebraska front seven on defense and also a physical front on offense where they're able to keep the chains moving. I think Colorado's going to be too reliant on the explosive plays to actually like pull an upset here.
I think that's absolutely fair. I will say one thing I meant to mention and I forgot to. I think Colorado's offensive line looked notably improved. I understand it was North Dakota State where you're not looking at the same dudes, but I think they looked better. And you to be clear, I do. I legitimately do.
Run the ball.
That in pass blocking. So sorry. Let me be clear. I think they look. Shador looked like he was running for his life a hell of a lot less than he was last year. And so I think that in terms of Colorado, I think this Colorado offense, like you said, is going to be hunting the explosive play. I think they're going to be doing that most of the year. We even saw it against North Dakota State. That's kind of what it looked like they were doing, even against an FCS opponent. So, like, I do think they're going to hunt that, and I think that the offensive line has improved enough as a pass-blocking unit to be able to do that. Again, Nebraska's strength is in the front seven, as you mentioned, and I do think that they are going to be able to get a little bit more pressure than North Dakota State, but I do trust the offensive line a little bit more than I did last year. But and I need to clarify that as well. That is a low bar. I think you and I could have gotten off a nice rush on Colorado's offensive line at the end of last year.
Ironically, looking at PFF's blocking offensive line, pass blocking 92nd last week, run blocking 72nd last week. So they actually graded it better than run blocking. But, I mean, they completely abandoned the run, though. It just was not working for Colorado. So I'm still concerned that Colorado could hold up. And I will say, maybe I'm falling into the narrative trap, but Colorado ran it up on Nebraska last year at home with a team that really struggled to protect the ball and with Jeff Sims. This is – Lincoln hasn't really been rocking over the last few years, but that is a starving program that wants to succeed. Like, that is a twisted fan base that really, really wants to win. And I know Colorado, their record isn't going to match the hype they bring in with Deion and Shedeur and everything. But listen, you saw North Dakota State give them a run. I don't know. I just feel like Colorado might be walking into a bit of a buzzsaw here in terms of the environment, in terms of the improving team, and with a team that has a bit of a chip on its shoulder with how it went last year. I know that's maybe stuff that I'm overanalyzing into the game, but I do think there's something to be said that Nebraska might be really, really itching to get back at Colorado given last year. Really quick, though, before we move on. So EPA per pass last week for Colorado – in the 94th percentile relative to games last year, EPA per rush in the 23rd percentile in games last year. And just overall, they pass the ball. Where are my passes? They pass the ball. Can't find that number. But, oh, so they passed the ball 35 times. They ran the ball 22 times. So that's about a 60-40 split. I think against this Nebraska defensive line, that might even skew a little bit further towards like 75-25.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely in the cards. I see this game being a lot of throwing the ball on both sides of the ball, because I think that
– good for the over too.
Yeah, that's what we want to see. We want to see the clock stopping on incompletions, please. Although I don't foresee a whole lot of incompletions in this game either.
But like at least the ball is going to be moving. But typically pass happy scripts help you over.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I would put this over probably about 63. That's probably where I would set this number. So getting it at 57.5, I'm all over it.
Yeah. All right, we move to our two padding it picks, underdog picks. I was wrong on mine. I took Southern Illinois against BYU. Cody cashed in on his Nevada, winning the game outright against Troy. Cody, you win last week. You get the first word here on your underdog. Who you got?
I'm going with Q's, and I know I slandered the Orange a little bit earlier in this program, but I've got them at plus 22 on the money line against Georgia Tech. And the more I'm thinking about this, the more I think Georgia Tech, their upset of Florida State is just being overvalued. I think we're finding out that Florida State is just extremely limited. The one thing I did see from Syracuse that impressed me was Kyle McCord in this passing offense looks pretty damn good. And honestly had me wondering if Ohio State – with Will Howard not putting forth the best passing effort I've ever seen, if Ohio State was wishing they may have kept Kyle McCord. It's probably just one game, and I'm not going to overreact that greatly. But I do think this passing offense is extremely upgraded with this new staff, with all the transfers they brought in, with Kyle McCord being at the helm of the offense. We haven't seen Georgia Tech have to defend a strong passing offense yet. We saw what DJU in this in the Florida State passing offense are capable of, and it's nothing impressive. They're just dinking and dunking, like flirting with like under 5 air yards per attempt, basically on every single throw. I think Kyle McCord and this offense are going to look for explosives, and we don't know necessarily how Georgia Tech can handle facing that type of offense. We saw them play, I would say, about the same, like look the same game script as the Florida State game against Georgia State. Like they pulled away late, but it wasn't a dominant effort, I wouldn't say. I think Georgia Tech's biggest strength is they know exactly who they are.
Yep.
But I think exactly who they are is a very defined ceiling, whereas Syracuse, I think, has a little more volatility. But if we hit on the right side of that volatility, I think they get in a game script where Georgia Tech doesn't have the offensive firepower with Haynes King to keep up.
Yeah, that Cuse game was driving me insane. I had some good numbers on Cuse, and just like they really couldn't set an edge there and shut down Ohio's running game. They just made it really
it was tough.
But they got it done. And I will say the offense did look really good. It started a little slow, and then like second quarter and through the second half, they really got it going. So I agree. High volatility. I think you really nailed the head on, hit the nail on the head there with Cuse. Still don't really know where this team is going in terms of are they trending upward with their talent and they could kind of beat teams at their level. Or a little too much expectation around this team with the talent there, and they're going to come up a little short in terms of these matchups. Whereas Georgia Tech, I think we could agree, we kind of know where this team is, probably upper middle ACC. Cuse, we're not sure where they're at. They're at home. I agree. This is a lot of respect for Georgia Tech, in my opinion. It would be Cuse or nothing for me. So I don't mind taking a shot on the volatility. I guess it's not really the same vein, but – I like Illinois to beat Kansas at home on Saturday night. So last year, Kansas went in there and absolutely whooped Illinois. And it was the start of a really down year for Illinois. If you remember 2 years ago, they had a banner year under Bert Bielema. I believe they won like 8 or 9 games. Really, really strong year for Illinois, who had struggled over the past. This year, I'm a little bit higher on Illinois, I think, than the market. And I look at who's there. You bring back Altmaier, who was actually pretty solid last year.
Yeah.
Pat Bryan steps in as the number one receiver. They get Zachary Franklin, who couldn't catch on at Ole Miss due to injury. He's back with his old offensive coordinator. So I think the passing game is going to get better. And Cody, if you watch this game on FS1, you're going to see Illinois' new bell cow running back. And cow is used explicitly because this guy, Caden Fagan, 6'3", 250 pounds.
That's a beefy boy
back there. I think Illinois' offense is going to be significantly better this year. A lot of talk about the offensive line being better. So I think Illinois' offense is stock up. And this is a Kansas team that we'll say they're a bit undersized on the defensive line. They're replacing their best pass rusher. They're not that good of a defense to begin with. But I think that they might be pushed backwards, to put it that way. At home, Illinois, the defense, look, if you look at where they were last year, they lost their DC Ryan Walters to Purdue. He's the head coach there now. They also lost two pros in the secondary, which Illinois typically does not get.
Yeah.
They also, the number 5 pick in the NFL draft 2 years ago, Devin Witherspoon. So a pretty atypical type of drop-off from Illinois. And I think it's underrated. And like, this is like a weird tangent, a random tangent, but like Florida State, for example, they lost 13 guys to NFL rosters. Unless you're like Georgia or Alabama, it's just tough to replicate that type of production. So Illinois, think about it. Okay, we're comparing Florida State to Illinois. Illinois loses two guys in the same position group to the NFL, one of which a top 5 pick. He was the number 1 cornerback drafted.
Yeah.
Or was he the 2nd cornerback drafted? Whatever, top 5 pick. That hurts. So I think Illinois' defense gonna bounce back. Kansas, they did not run Jalen Daniels at all. I think there are some questions on how dynamic he's really going to be this season after a season-ending back injury. Only played in a handful of games. Granted, he played in this one. I don't know. I think this is a weird spot for Kansas entering as a road favorite, some revenge on their mind. I think Illinois can win this game outright.
I like it, man. And one thing that stood out to me, you talked about, you know, Jalen Daniels is perhaps limited mobility in comparison to what we've seen in previous years. I also think that we might be early on in the season underrating how much the loss of Anadi Kotoniki might affect this team, because I almost had Penn State as my pleasant surprise because that offense looked pretty damn good under Kotoniki. And losing that, I was not that impressed by the Kansas offense in week one. Maybe it gets better because Jalen Daniels has missed a lot of time, but I do think we're looking at a Kansas offense that might be a little bit worse under Jeff Grimes than it was a year ago. So I like this pick a lot. Illinois is another team, like, for all the reasons you mentioned, like, Altmaier towards the end of the season last year played very well. Very well. And now you have an improved position group around him. You have a little bit more experience in the offensive line. They brought in some transfers there that I really like. So I do think Illinois is absolutely live for this one.
Yeah. So there are underdog picks. We now move to the sickos part of the program. Cody, where are you looking on Saturday with your sickos pick?
Yeah, so I'm going to be watching deep into the fourth quarter of Ole Miss, Middle Tennessee State, because I'm taking Ole Miss minus 40.5 to cover this huge spread against the Blue Raiders. Lane Kiffin likes to pour it on some teams, and I don't think Middle Tennessee is very good. I think Middle might be one of the worst G5 programs in the country this year. When I did win total projections, I had them projected at 4 wins. This was certainly not one of them.
To Tennessee Tech.
Yeah, so I am quite worried about what Middle is going to look like. 3-4 wins might be a little high for them, if I'm being honest, based on what I saw last week. Whereas Ole Miss, we saw that they're just not afraid to pour it on. Jackson Dart had 6 touchdowns in the first half by himself, passing and rushing. So, like, I do think Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin have no problem pouring it on. We've seen the talent that Ole Miss has brought in this offseason. I think that Lane Kiffin and this program are out to make a statement, and I think Middle Tennessee and the Middle Tennessees of this world are going to be on the wrong side of that quite often early in the season.
I bet this game also. So,
okay.
I mean, look, I know he does not bet, but you can't not think that Lane Kiffin didn't see the updated Heisman odds that see Jackson Dart tied at the top of the board with Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward and saying, oh, we got some style points here for Jackson Dart. We can really build up some of his numbers that could pay off later in the year when we start comparing resumes. Yeah, I think Ole Miss is absolutely going to lay it down on Middle Tennessee. And I'm a little bit higher on Middle Tennessee than you are. I actually took their win total over.
Oh, okay.
Does not mean that they need to compete in this game. That has nothing to do with it. It's a different type of class. So maybe I'm dead wrong on Middle Tennessee, and they're just much worse than that. But either way, I think Ole Miss could pour it on Middle Tennessee. Mine, it's not super sick. That's pretty sick. Mine's not super sick, but I took ECU as a road favorite against Old Dominion, -2.5.
Okay.
So ECU's a team I was high on going into the year. I actually think they could contend for the AAC. They hired, speaking of Lane Kiffin, they hired Ole Miss's co-offensive coordinator. I believe he goes by the name John David Baker. Mm-hmm. He gets Jake Garcia, the former Miami and Mizzou quarterback. He played his first game in 3 years, pretty much last week. He threw 3 picks against Norfolk State. They had 6 turnovers in the game. They still scored 42 points. Like, this team is going to play fast. This team is going to air it out. This, keep an eye on ECU. This team is potentially going places. I think they have a lot of talent here. I know they went 2-10 last year. The defense was actually good. It was the offense couldn't produce anything. They fixed that. The defense returns a ton. So I like ECU and Old Dominion. I know you're thinking to yourself, oh, well, they hung around with South Carolina. I watched part of that game. I think it's more of an indictment on South Carolina and their inability to pass the ball because ODU just loaded up the box and brought pressure. So South Carolina team maybe to keep an eye on in terms of how their offense is going to look, but it's an ODU team I'm down on, and it's an ECU team that I am high on. So I think ECU, I mean, I make this game way higher. I think ECU wins this game comfortably. So go Pirates. I think they win this one pretty comfortably.
So I like this pick. I think your reasoning sound. And again, I no offense to our producer Joanne, who we love and adore. But yeah, South Carolina might just be certified cheeks this year, man. It's tough. But no, one thing I was looking at when I was looking at the pace that ECU played at this past week, I'm wondering if they're going to be our Dilfer over team of this year, where. With the pace they're playing at, I kind of have that circled as something I'm keeping an eye on for like the first like 3 weeks of the season, because with the pace they play at and the volatility that we saw against Norfolk State, like, this could be a team that hangs a lot of points on the board but also puts themselves in a position to allow a lot of points, even with an experienced defense.
I'm clearly brushing off on you that we're going to Dilfer over references here. So we'll see. Great picks. Great picks. Great show. Hopefully I could turn mine around. Hopefully I won't root for you ever to fail, but I just got to outpace you now. So I spotted you too. I got to get it back this week. So Cody, before we get out of here, why don't you recap your picks for week two?
Yeah, so Texas, I have Texas -7.5 over Michigan. I have the Boise State, Oregon over 61.5. I have Tennessee, NC State over 60.5. Colorado, Nebraska over 57.5. Give me Syracuse on the field against Georgia Tech. And then Sicko's pick, give me Ole Miss sweating out -40.5 against Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, and for me, I took the first half under 22.5 in Texas, Michigan, the Oregon team total over 40.5, the Tennessee team total over 34.5, over 57.5 in Colorado, Nebraska, took Illinois as a home dog against Kansas, that's +184, and then I took East Carolina -2.5 against ODU. Cody, great show as always. You absolutely crushed it. Big thank you to Joanne. Big thank you to everyone who checks out the podcast. Will be back live next week on Tuesday afternoon, recapping week 2 and previewing week 3. Until then, enjoy the games, and we'll see you on Tuesday.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.